very much for the invitation, Bruce. Okay, so I'm going to be talking about coagulation and fragmentation, and I'm going to start by talking in rather general terms. So a coalescent was something which models a group of blocks which randomly over the course of time join together. And a fragmentation is the opposite. So you have a group of blocks which randomly over the course of time split up. Okay. So the models I'm going to be dealing with here are going to satisfy certain fairly reasonable conditions. I hope you'll agree that they're reasonable anyway. So my particles are going to have, so I'm going to use interchangeably the words particles, blocks, and anything else cognate. Okay, particles have masses or sizes, but don't have positions. Okay. So this is really just an assumption to make our lives easier. Models with geometry are very hard to study, so for the moment we're going to stick to models without. Okay, secondly, models won't have memory. Okay, so everything's going to be Markovian here. Now the two important ones. So different blocks will fragment independently. So that's in the fragmentation setting, and in the coalescence setting, we'll have any group of blocks will coalesce at a rate which is independent of any other particles in the system. So the rate of coalescence of a particular group of blocks depends only on those blocks. Okay, so 3 and 4, at least from the point of view of physical application, seem quite reasonable, and 2 likewise. Okay, so on the basis of these conditions, various nice classes of coalescence and fragmentations have been defined. So for those who've seen them before, there's Pittman's lambda coalescence. Which is also called the coalescent with multiple collisions. So the idea in Pittman's lambda coalescence is that block sizes don't matter. So the rate of coalescence of a group of blocks just depends on how many of them there are. Okay. So an extension of that is Schlienberg's coalescence with simultaneous multiple collisions. Oops. And then finally, in the fragmentation setting, there are two classes of fragmentations which have been defined by Bertrand, which are the homogeneous and self-similar fragmentations. The fragmentations, a block always fragments in the same way, but the rate at which it fragments depends on its size as a power of that size. So if I have a block of size x, then it fragments roughly at a rate x to the alpha for some real parameter alpha. Okay, so the common property of these three classes, or four classes, is that somewhere in their construction is a Poisson lambda measure. Okay, so homogeneous is the case where alpha equals 0. So intuitively speaking, these two phenomena are dual, where if you run a coalescent forward in time, you see blocks sticking together, and if you run it backwards in time, you see them falling apart. And it would be nice to give some proper mathematical sense to this statement that these two things are somehow inverse operations. Unfortunately, once we impose conditions 3 and 4, it's really not so obvious. And in fact, all we have so far are just some examples. So, in fact, what I'm going to do today is give you another example, which I think is cute. But it doesn't really attack the main problem, which is, this is a slightly vaguely posed open problem, but if we take, say, one of these classes here, and we use time reversal, possibly with a time change, do we ever obtain a sensible member of another class? So if I take, say, a homogeneous fragmentation, and I time reverse it, do I ever obtain a sensible coalescent which satisfies condition 4? So the examples we have so far tend to fall into these classes, possibly because they're the most studied. So Kingman's coalescent. Which is the most basic lambda coalescent, satisfies a certain form of duality with a sort of uniform fragmentation as its dual. There's the Bolthausen-Snipman coalescent, which time reverses to give a fragmentation in a really rather non-obvious way. And then there's also, I suppose, what you might call the sort of paradigm for this subject, which is the additive coalescent. So this is a standard additive coalescent that we talked about last night. Okay, so why are we interested in this? This is a kind of natural mathematical problem. I think it's quite a nice one. But also it's got some practical application, which is that, I think that roughly speaking, fragmentation is easier to study than coagulation. And this is what happens in the case of the additive coalescent. We can build a standard version of a coalescent by taking a fragmentation and then time reversing it. And so we can transfer properties of the fragmentation over into properties of the coalescent. So the additive coalescent is such that if I have blocks of sizes x and y, blocks of masses x and y, then they coalesce at rate x plus y. What Alders and Pittman did was they took the continuum random tree, they took a fairly natural Poisson process of cuts along the skeleton of the tree, and as you take more and more of these cuts, you get a fragmentation process. In fact, it's one of Dassmann's self-similar fragmentations. And if you time reverse that, it just so happens that you get this. So this seems like a very special property of the continuum random tree, but it's nonetheless a nice example of this phenomenon. Okay. So I think I've talked enough about the general problem. So here's my example. So I'm going to remind you about the Poisson Dirichlet distribution. Okay, so this is the full two-parameter family that was defined by Pittman and Yaw. And I think this is probably the nicest definition to give. So this is the stick-breaking scheme. Okay, so I have two parameters. Alpha, which is can be take the value 0, but is otherwise between 0 and 1. And theta, which must be strictly greater than minus alpha. Okay. And I let B1, B2, and so on be independent beta random variables where the parameters depend on n, so the index n. So such that Bn has a beta 1 minus alpha theta plus n alpha distribution. Okay. So then I let x1 tilde be just b1. And then for subsequent n, I take xn tilde to be 1 minus b1, 1 minus b2, and so on, up to n minus 1, and then bn. So this is called the stick breaking scheme because I have, say, the interval 0, 1. First I take a section which has length b1. Then I look at the rest and take a section whose relative length is b2. And then I continue, so on and so forth. Okay, and so if I take these xi tildes and I rank them in decreasing order, what I obtain is the Poisson de Richelieu distribution with parameters alpha and phi. So, then this vector, infinite vector, has Poisson de Richelieu alpha theta distribution. Okay. So for the rest of this talk, I'm going to be working on the following space, so what I call delta infinity, which is the set of sequences x1, x2, and so on, such that the coordinates are in decreasing order, and they have some 1. So it's related to the Dirichlet distribution, basically. And I think the name was coined by Kingman, who originally defined a one parameter version of this with just the theta. No, the word Poisson comes from the fact that there's a different way of looking at this, which is built out of the atoms of a Poisson random measure, which I'll show you in a minute. Okay, so a Poisson de Richelieu random variable lives on this space delta infinity. And it's quite a natural space to think about doing coagulation and fragmentation on. So what we have is just a partition of the interval 0, 1, you can imagine it as. So just split up into different lengths, and these lengths coalesce or fragment as necessary. Okay. So it's also useful to have a name for the version of this vector that has the tildes. And this has a Griffith, Eng, and McCloskey distribution. Parameters alpha and theta. All you need to know about this is that it's just a size bias reordering of the Poisson de Richelieu vector. Okay, so there are several different representations of these things, and it's going to be quite useful to us later to have the following theorem. So the first part of this is due to Kingman. And in fact, I think this was his original definition of a Poisson de Richelieu zero theta distribution. So this is the case where alpha is zero. Okay, so imagine that you lay the lengths out on 0, 1, any order, it doesn't matter. And you take uniform random variables. Okay, so your first uniform random variable hits one of these lengths. Take that as your first length. Now, keep resampling your uniforms until you find a new length. That's your second, and so on and so forth. Okay. Right, so let gamma of t, just on the interval 0, theta, be a gamma subordinator. Which has rank jumps in the interval 0, theta, psi I. In fact, they're going to be necessarily different. This is in the time interval 0, theta. So another way of looking at this is just as a Poisson random measure on 0, theta cross R plus, which has intensity x to the minus 1, e to the minus x dx, and just look at the atoms of that random measure. Okay, then if I normalize by gamma of theta, then these psi i's have the same distribution as plus under x a 0 theta. Okay. So here, gamma of theta is just the sum of these things. Okay, and the second part, which is an extension of this theorem by Pittman and Yaw, deals with not quite all of the rest of the cases, but a good part of them. So here I need theta to be positive. So the full range goes down to minus alpha here. And that's not possible with this representation. Okay, so once again it's in terms of subordinators. So 4S is a subordinator with Levy measure. Alpha x to the minus alpha minus 1, e to the minus x dx. So something similar to what we get in the just gamma case, but slightly tweaked. Okay. So let f be an independent gamma, can I remember? So theta on alpha, gamma of 1 minus alpha random over. So this is just the usual gamma function here. Okay. So then, if this time these are the rank jumps in a time interval 0 up to s, so a random time interval of time, then the same thing holds. Okay. So, a bit later, this is a theorem that I will use to prove my coagulation fragmentation duality. One thing I should have said here is that the fact this is independent of gamma of theta which has a gamma distribution. And likewise this is independent of tau of s which has another gamma distribution. So let me now say what my coagulation fragmentation operators are. They're really about as simple as you can imagine. Okay. Okay, so the fragmentation operator does the following. It takes an element of delta infinity, it takes a size bias pick from amongst the coordinates, and it splits it with another Poisson-Dirichlet distribution with the correct parameter. So frag alpha takes an element of delta infinity and maps it into another element of delta infinity as follows. So if I fix x in delta infinity and let I be a random variable such that probability that I equals little I is just xi, so x here has coordinates x1, x2, and so forth. Okay, so this is taking an index which gives me a size bias pick. So let eta with coordinates eta1, eta2, and so on and so forth, D, plus indirectly, alpha, 1 minus alpha. So then I define frag alpha of x just to be what happens if I take xi and I split it in the obvious way using eta. So that gives me infinite many coordinates, and then I get xi plus 1, and so on. And I need to re-rank this in order to get an element of delta infinity. Okay, my coagulation operator has two parameters. Sorry? All the iters. So, sorry, there's an infinite stream of these in here, and then another infinite stream of things coming off the end. So there's only one block which gets split. And equally, in the coagulation operator, there's only going to be one block which is created. Okay, so this is now going to pick a beta-distributed random variable, and then it's going to use that beta-distributed random variable as a proportion of the blocks to pick. Okay, so let me write this down sensibly. Okay, so let D be either 1 over theta plus 1, if alpha is 0, or in general, have a beta 1 minus alpha on alpha, theta plus alpha on alpha distribution, if alpha is positive. Okay, then let I1, I2, and so on be, just 0, 1 random variables, I suppose, which, given beta, are Di Bernoulli. Which, given B, are IID Bernoulli B. So I select a proportion first, and then I pick that proportion of my blocks, and I stick them together. So, some element of delta infinity, what I get can be written as the sum over indices I such that II is 1, and then the other stuff. Such that IJ is 0. And then, of course, I need to re-rank as well. Okay, so anything that's not picked by this procedure just gets left alone. Duality. Okay, so I take the full parameter range. Okay, and I suppose x and y are random variables taking values in delta infinity. So then the following are equivalent. If I take x to have Poisson Dirichlet alpha theta distribution and conditional on x, y has the distribution of frag alpha of x, and that's equivalent to starting with y having Poisson Dirichlet alpha theta plus 1 distribution and conditional on y, x has coag alpha theta of y distribution. So going one way, I use frag alpha, and I get back by using coag alpha theta. Okay, so this kind of resembles a theorem of Pittman, which also concerned duality for Poisson Dirichlet distributions. So what he showed was that if I start with Poisson Dirichlet alpha beta theta, and I perform a certain fragmentation operation, then I get Poisson Dirichlet alpha theta, and there's a coagulation operation that goes back the other way. Okay. Now what's different here is that in Pittman's world, every block is split in the fragmentation, and going back again, every block is somehow included in a coagulation event. But somehow this seems to provide a sort of additive in the second parameter counterpart of this multiplicative in the first parameter theorem here. Okay, so since this is actually pretty easy to prove, I may as well show you how to do it. Okay, so let's do the alpha positive case, which is the harder of the two. Alpha equals zeros. Follows in pretty much the same way. Okay, so I'm going to take the subordinator of the representation. Okay, so it only has a parameter alpha in its definition, so it's the right alpha. Okay, I'm going to let F have gamma theta plus 1 on alpha, gamma of 1 minus alpha distribution. And independently, B is going to be beta 1 minus alpha on alpha, theta plus alpha on alpha. It's not going to matter because the thing that's going to matter will be theta plus 1. Which will be positive. Okay, so far this is just the right alpha over there, and then here I've got theta plus 1 rather than theta. This will okay. What I'm trying to create is the Poisson Dirichlet alpha theta plus 1 to start with. Okay. Okay, so I've got the interval 0 s. of random length, and here's the interval 0 up to bs. Okay. I have a certain number of jumps of this subordinator. Okay, this is inevitably going to be a bad drawing, there are infinitely many close to the origin. Okay, and so what I want to be able to do is I'm sort of starting in the y having Poisson Dirichlet alpha theta plus 1 situation. And I'm saying, what happens if I coalesce a proportion B of my jumps? So it's like sticking everything in here together and then putting it in with what's left over. Okay, so. I have essentially three sets of jumps. So let these be the jumps in the whole interval 0 up to S. Let these be the jumps in 0 up to BS, and then with double prime. In the remaining interval. Okay, so the union of these two sets of jumps is one set of jumps there. Okay, now, because my Poisson random measure is just homogeneous on the line, if I take these jumps and stick them together, that's picking a proportion B of them and adding them together. Right, so to start with, if I take these jumps here, my representation says that this is plus under x may alpha theta plus 1. Okay. So independently, tau of s. So, by standard beta gamma algebra, B and S are independent, so their product has another gamma distribution, which is n minus alpha on alpha, L of 1 minus alpha. And so the following hold independently. If I just look at the jumps in the first interval 0 up to BS, and that has distribution plus under x alpha 1 minus alpha. If I look at the jumps in the remaining part, then independently those have distribution plus under x alpha theta plus alpha. And finally, the ratio of tau of BS to tau of S, it's just beta 1 minus alpha theta plus alpha. So, if I number these, putting 2 and 3 together and using the stick breaking scheme, I see that firstly, tau of BS over tau of S is a side bias tick from the vector which combines these. Now, maybe I'll write it down. So if I take the sort of coagulated version, where I stuck everything in the interval 0 up to BS together, and they're just taking the remaining jump, of course if I reorder, that gets me a plus under x alpha theta, and this is a side bias pick from it. So we can kind of see the coagulation and fragmentation steps at the same time here. So this is a coagulated version of our original plus under x alpha theta plus 1, and to go back the other way, we take our side bias pick, we split it up into its constituent jumps. Okay. So I think the natural thing to do with these operators is to build them into processes. And because everything somehow seems to be additive, discrete time seems to be the way to do this. So we just do the obvious thing. So I can just define transition probabilities by the following. So given xi, let xi plus 1 just have the distribution of frag alpha of xi. So then if I start with x naught having a plus under it clay alpha theta distribution, then xi has a plus under it clay alpha theta plus I distribution for all I. And you can run this backwards in time and get a Markov coagulation chain in the backward direction, which just has inhomogeneous transition probabilities. So if you sort of come in from infinity here, an inhomogeneous Markov chain, with given xi plus 1, xi has a distribution coag alpha theta plus I of xi plus 1. Okay, so all that follows straightforwardly from our symmetric operators. Okay, so you could potentially put these things into continuous time just by taking a Poisson process as your inter-jump times. And in that case, what we get is a self-similar fragmentation of index 1, which corresponds to taking a size bias pick, and various other parameters in Dutton's world of self-similar fragmentations. There's a slight problem with time reversing that, which is that this inhomogeneity causes a problem. So because the Poisson Dirichlet distributions, once you've got a positive alpha, they're not distinguishable. They're mutually absolutely continuous for different thetas. So I can't tell, given my state, which coagulation operator I should apply to it, which is a slight problem. So you have to carry more information in order to make it Markovian in reverse time. But in any case, it seems that discrete time is the natural thing to do here. Okay, so just to finish off, I'd like to show you how these things naturally crop up in a certain sort of recursive tree. What do I mean by a recursive tree? So I mean a combinatorial tree which is rooted, say, at zero, and whose labels increase along paths away from the root. So here's an example. So I start with zero. One necessarily has to attach to it. And then I could have something like okay, so this is an example of a recursive tree. And by the way, I've drawn it, you can see that the most natural way to build these things is to just add vertices one by one. And if I do that, I'm never going to end up in a situation where I don't have increasing paths away from the root. Okay, so here's a random way to create such a tree. Okay, so I start with a vertex 0 and one child labeled 1. Okay, and then I add my vertices 2, 3, 4, and so on, one by one. And when node I arrives, it becomes a child of node J with probability proportional to 1 minus alpha plus alpha times KJ, where KJ is the number of children that node J has so far. Obviously, J is between 1 and I minus 1, and the root does something different. So this is one possibility. The other possibility is it becomes a child of 0 with probability proportional to theta plus alpha KJ, or K0, where K0 is just the number of children of the root so far. Okay. So here I've got probability of adding to both, and it's one of these models of preferential attachment, essentially. The more children I have so far, the more I'm likely to get. Okay. So as an example to work with. Here's such a tree. Okay, that's probably enough. Okay, so now imagine the following procedure. I come along and I erase the root. Okay, so now I'm left with a forest of trees, and I'm imagining that I've run my tree building procedure out to infinity, so I have infinite size trees here. Okay, I just can't draw that much. Okay. And then, so let's call that, let's call B0 the partition of the naturals that I obtained by doing that. By just creating a block from the labels of each subtree. Okay, so obtained by removing 0. Okay, and let's call the blocks of B0, B01, B02, and so on, where these are listed in increasing order of least elements. So here I would list this first, because 1 is the smallest thing. Then I would list this one second, and then this one. Okay, so in order of increasing least element. Okay, so it turns out this is an exchangeable random partition, and so its blocks have asymptotic frequencies. And in fact, I can keep doing the same thing. So let Bi be the partition of n less 1 up to I, which I obtain by removing 1 up to I. So this, so if I remove 0, then if I remove 1, that splits here the block that was containing 1 into 2 parts. And then eventually I remove 2, and that splits its block here into 3 parts. So let Bi be the partition of n less 1 up to I obtained by removing 1 up to I. The nodes labeled 1 up to I. Okay, so here's a theorem. For all I greater than or equal to 1, the blocks Bi1, Bi2, and so on possess asymptotic frequencies. J is the limit as n tends to infinity of Bij, intersection of the first n integers divided by n. Okay. Now the fact that I'm looking at partitions of n minus the first I integers makes no difference here. N's going to infinity and we lose all the information about what's happening in the first I integers anyway. Okay. So these asymptotic frequencies, Fi, are in delta infinity, or at least if I put them in decreasing order, they are. Okay. So let Gi be the reordered vector Fi. Okay. Now it turns out that Gi has Poisson Dirichlet alpha theta plus I distribution, and then in fact more than that is true. Viewed as a process, this collection of asymptotic frequencies has the same distribution as our Markov chain, our sort of Markov fragmentation chain that we saw earlier. So what's going on here is that when I take my tree, let's do it with this one. Okay, so the first thing I do is I take that. Okay, so the asymptotic frequencies I get here are Poisson directly alpha theta, and once I re-rank them, if I split this block containing one, that's taking a side biased pick and splitting it with the correct Poisson directly frequencies, and so on and so forth. So really this tree is a sort of a side biased way of looking at this process, which seems like the right way to look at it. I mean, in the fragmentation setting, you've got one source of randomness to take your size bias pick, and then another source of randomness to split it with the Poisson directly thing. Here, given the tree, the fragmentation is entirely deterministic. So the tree is somehow a concrete representation of the filtration of this fragmentation. And you can see the coagulation going backwards and the Markov property relatively easily, but I won't go into that here. Anyway, I think I've talked enough. Thank you very much.